Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, John, for the very kind introduction. Thank you for the warm welcome here today. I really appreciate the chance to be with you on this great day in America. It's fun that you stacked up the North Dakotans here in the front so I get a good warm reception. And I appreciate that. You know, I'm just wrapping up my first month in office. I've been continuing to look for that honeymoon period. You know, you're supposed to get some time when you come in as the new Secretary of Agriculture to blend in a little bit, to understand the organization, to find out what's going on. I got dumped right into the midst of the Farm Bill negotiations. And even veterans like Chuck Connor, the Deputy Secretary, tell me they're as tough as they've ever seen in Washington. On my first full day on the job, we were presented with a videotape of how business was being done at a slaughterhouse in California, and that has now led to the largest beef recall in the history of the U.S. So things have been pretty busy for me. But I have to tell you, I love the department. The USDA is just the best department in Washington. The range of missions that it carries out on behalf of the American people and the professionalism and dedication of the people who work there is amazing. President Lincoln, when he founded the USDA, called it the People's Department because it impacted so many different people in so many different ways. And I can already tell you that that is true. Just the chance that I've had to work with the people at USDA, not only in delivering the broad mission of this department, but the chance that I have to work with the great people there has just been, has made this transition a wonderful place. But it's challenging, I have to tell you. Moving from North Dakota to Washington, D.C., really takes some adjustment. Things are done a little different in the nation's capital, and I've been faced with some different things in my life. You know, North Dakota is the safest state in the nation, and we treat things there a little differently. We live in the wide open spaces. Washington, D.C. is a little different than that. And I'm still kind of getting used to it. I don't understand this whole security issue. You know, everywhere we go, we get hustled in the back door and the loading dock and down through the kitchen and into it's like, where's the front door? I don't know. It would be nice. and you go through security all the time. You have to go through the metal detectors and there's security people all over. And, you know, I have to tell you, as I mentioned, a little different in North Dakota. One time I was in the governor's residence on a Sunday afternoon, and there are cameras that watch over the governor's residence in Bismarck on the Capitol grounds. I was sitting there and got a phone call. It was a security officer that was looking at the videos and the cameras, the view, and he said, you know, I see this box that's kind of leaning up against the garage door that I haven't seen before. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. And he said, it's got some things sticking out of the top of it. It kind of looks like wires. I'm not sure what it is. And I nodded. I don't think he heard me. But he said, maybe you want to go out there and check it out. Yeah, it's a little different in North Dakota than Washington. But along with taking on some challenging issues in moving and the issues that I've been immersed with immediately within a department, I've also been able to announce some pretty exciting news, like the new projection for this year's agriculture exports, $101 billion. Up $19 billion over last year's record performance and up almost $10 billion from the number that we were predicting just 3 months ago. That's a dynamic marketplace. Things are changing rapidly. This year, we expect agriculture to generate a positive trade surplus of more than $24 billion. Now, that's what I call a market in motion. There's plenty to celebrate in agriculture today. Not only are record exports, but record prices for corn and wheat and soybeans, and record levels of farm income as well. The upward trend in commodity prices we saw through much of last year has continued on in 2008. Since the first of the year, corn is up 22%, soybeans 23%, and wheat 39%. Certainly, a good part of this is due to the lift in the markets that were received when I took office as Secretary of Agriculture. But I think there might be some other trends at work here as well. We're seeing a real dynamic agriculture marketplace emerge, not only domestically here, but internationally as well. And step by step, it is kind of blowing out of the water all of the assumptions that we used to live with about what this industry is capable of and what it can do. Now, let me focus on exports for just a minute. The growth that we are seeing in exports this year is based not only on higher prices, but importantly on higher volumes. There's a growing demand for our high-value exports, such as fresh and processed fruits and vegetables, as well as pork and beef and poultry and grocery products. Many factors are driving this growth. Global weather, such as the droughts that have cut production in Europe and Australia. Consumer demand, particularly from the growing ranks of the middle class that are emerging in the economies such as China and Mexico. And, of course, the strong demand for energy crops. Here at home, help us meet the nation's need for renewable fuels. The opportunity is here today to keep that curve moving upward and climbing. And that's what we at USDA are committed to do. The 1 billion customers that are emerging in the middle class that we have been expecting to arrive in the global marketplace are already showing up, and they're making their presence felt in their purchasing decisions. As you know, President Bush is strongly committed to free trade. And at USDA, we believe one of the most important things we can do is to help level the playing field out there so that U.S. producers who want to participate in foreign markets can do so in an honest and open and fair trading arena. We took a great step forward in the trade front when President Bush in December signed the Peru trade agreement after the Senate approved it with a real strong bipartisan vote. The next chapter of this story should be the passage of the free trade agreements in Korea and Panama and Colombia. All have big gains for promise for us at USA Agriculture. Taken together, Peru plus Korea, Panama, and Colombia provide an opportunity to open the door for $3 billion worth of increased agriculture exports in the next year. In a few weeks, I will be leading a delegation of members of Congress to Colombia so that we can see what is happening there, both politically and economically, and show how our stronger trade ties can help both nations. Not only do we open up markets for our agriculture opportunities, but we also can help improve the lives and the people of that nation. And I look forward to visiting with labor leaders there, with farmers who have gotten away from the entrapment of growing drugs to now growing flowers and fruits and vegetables, and how importantly that economy shifts to a good, positive manner. And we can help that happen. We are also continuing to participate in the Doha round of the multilateral trade talks because of the great potential they offer for us to open doors to expand trade in many nations through a single agreement. That's been a difficult task. It's been up and down, as you know, over a long period of time, many years. But we will press for an agreement this year that is fair to all parties involved. As you well know, what happens in the international arena these days often has far more bearing on the decisions that you make on how to run your farms and your ranches and what happens in Washington. With the world price of oil now over $100 a barrel and gasoline heading in the direction of $4 a gallon at the pump, and our diesel prices in many areas of this country even higher than gasoline, our nation's need for alternative and renewable energy sources has never been greater. Some of the lift that we have been seeing in commodity prices this year is undoubtedly due to the renewable energy bill that forced a fuel standard. Congress passed and President Bush signed this into law in December. The new mandates for ethanol and for biodiesel production are good news for corn and soybean producers. But high prices for corn are also putting pressure on livestock feed and poultry producers as well. I will point out that help is on the way. The same energy bill that will boost grain-based ethanol production this year also requires us to meet a rising portion of our renewable fuels needs from cellulosic and other non-grain sources. Starting just 1 year later, in 2009, we see the increased demand for cellulosic production for ethanol kick in. By the time that the full mandate of 36 billion gallons kicks in, 15 years from now, 21 billion gallons of that, 60% of it will come from cellulosic fuel and other advanced biofuels. I'm convinced that through this process, we'll continue to see high prices in our commodities, but they will be market-driven and not driven by feedstocks that distort those commodity prices outside the market arena. This means that we have to give a high priority to research. I can tell you how important this is. You know, we import today 4 billion barrels of oil annually. If we could convert one-fourth of that import, or say 1 billion barrels of oil, into fuels that are generated by agriculture, it would mean that it would double the net farm income in this country. And I think we can do that. I think that our highest priority in the research effort is important because we have to find ways to make that cellulosic ethanol practical and a cost-effective alternative to corn-based ethanol. And it means we have to continue working with farmers to develop new energy crops such as switchgrass that can be cultivated on land that may be eligible for conservation protection. I believe that the energy bill showed that even in today's high-volume political climate, the President and Congress can and will come together to get important things done for this nation. And if energy is the example, I am optimistic that we will follow that up by passing a new farm bill this year that will deliver improved safety net to producers while also putting them on the strongest possible footing to compete in the global economy in the years to come. But we also need a new farm bill that will achieve some real reforms in farm policy without imposing taxes on the American people. The House and Senate, as you know, have been in conference since last month on the bill, trying to reconcile their different versions of how we should proceed with the proposals that the administration put forward last year. Over the last couple of weeks, the talks have focused on reaching an agreement on how much additional spending the bill should contain above our current baseline. As you know, the administration put on the table about a $4.5 billion increase in spending over baseline. The initial versions of the House and the Senate were way above that, about $17 billion over in the House and say $25 or $26 billion over in the Senate. And importantly, I think we've seen in recent days a movement to try to come to an understanding about how much more money we can afford to spend of the taxpayers' dollars on this type of legislation. The House and the Senate are moving closer to agreement, and as we speak, there are meetings taking place to try to come up with a spending number. And I think that represents really good progress, and important progress. But just important as setting a number for the increased spending in this legislation, I think how we pay for it is going to be an area of focus. The president has said time and time again that he will not sign a bill that raises taxes and uses taxpayer dollars to increase the size of government. I don't hear from many of you out there that say, gee, let's expand government and let's make it a little more costly and a little more burdensome on the way I live and the way I run my business and operate my farm and ranch. And, you know, it's interesting to me as we get into these debates about how to fund this bill, because I just don't hear folks ask for a bigger government, and I don't hear them ask for more taxes. But I do believe that you and your efforts to get the information out about what's important for you and your farms and your ranches and your lives and your homes and your families is really what helps us shape the effort on this Farm Bill legislation. You live and work, and where you operate is important to us because you do it, and no one knows better than you. And the administration, I can guarantee you, is willing to see additional spending in the Farm Bill as long as this is offset by reductions elsewhere in the budget. We want to use funding sources that don't increase your taxes. We've also been offering to Congress a bunch of suggestions about how that can be done. And we continue to put on the table many areas of funding sources that could work, that are acceptable to the administration, and that we hope will be adopted by the House and the Senate as they move through their deliberations. It is very important to your industry that these talks succeed. If they break down and we fail to pass a new farm bill this year, we'll be forced to extend the 2002 bill. That's not a good option. Left behind, if we extend this bill for 2 years, or maybe one, maybe 2 years, left behind will be non-trade distorting subsidies. It hurts us in the trade arena. Left behind will be investments in conservation and in energy. Left behind will be increases in spending for nutrition and nutrition assistance and a helping hand to people who need food that we can provide. That was good legislation, that 2002 bill. It was good legislation for the time, but really the time for that current legislation has passed. And we need to take the lessons learned from the 2002 law to give us a better farm policy for our years just ahead. And that's what USDA set out to do when the very comprehensive set of Farm Bill proposals was put forward in the beginning of last year. They grew out of the Farm Bill forums that were held across this country, 50 of them, that generated 4,000 comments from farmers and ranchers, some of you in this very room, who showed up and shared their thoughts about how a farm policy could be improved. But even with all of that, of course, there are some folks who say that the 2002 Farm Bill provided an ideal safety net, and we disagree. An ideal safety net does not send price support subsidies to producers who haven't actually had to sell their crop for a low price. We need to fix that. Producers should not be able to collect price support payments when, in fact, they have sold their crops at a high price and at a good price. Now, I understand that there are some issues there, and when we take ownership and release ownership of that crop is important, but we have to focus on making sure that our hard-earned taxpayer dollars don't go to people who don't need them. An ideal safety net does not use taxpayer dollars to provide payments to actually anyone, living anywhere, regardless of their financial status and their active involvement in farming. An ideal safety net does not hand out subsidy checks to people who just simply don't need that helping hand. So we want to reprioritize our funding by reducing the adjusted gross income cap to $200,000 a year. That limits the top 2% of the taxpayers in the United States. An ideal safety net with a countrywide focus does not provide nearly 90% of its support to only 5 crops, even if 3 of them are very close to your hearts here today. But we have to broaden the opportunity for specialized crops out there and other areas instead of just concentrating this on one place. And then finally, an ideal safety net does not include a counter-cyclical program that is based on price that is set by some government agency and too often gives farmers the most help when they need it the least. An effective safety net, should really take revenues and yields into consideration, and we hope to be able to see that happen. But I have to tell you, a better farm bill is within reach today. All we have to do is bring enough flexibility and common sense to the bargaining table to make this happen. And I promise you that I will do, and USDA will do, everything that we can in the coming weeks to make this happen. In closing, let me congratulate you for being here today. You know, you take a step forward to get involved in your industry, to try to improve it, to make it better. By being here, I think you show me that you are willing to get involved and you're willing to learn and to do things that do make the industry better. And I commend you for that. It's really why I accepted this job as Secretary of Agriculture. It's because what you do is very important, I believe, to this nation. I want to be involved in the agriculture arena, and I'm committed to be doing so. But you are the ones that step forward to make the improvements happen, to provide better opportunities to move the economy forward for people living and working in the rural atmosphere. You know, it pains me that around the world there are people who are so jealous of our society that they want to see our country put down, that they want to pull it back to their level, that they want to destroy our society. And as that unfolds across this world, I think that it generates a stronger responsibility that we have in the agriculture arena. And we just cannot let that happen. You know, I believe that agriculture must continue to produce the very foundations that made this country great. The agrarian lifestyle, the rural lifestyle, the people out there who touch the land really are the ones who produce the character, the hard work ethics, the understanding of life and death, the sense of community, the responsibility for a helping hand, and to providing for those in need really come from the agriculture community. I think it generates the moral fiber that knits together our communities into this great state, the great nation of the United States of America. And I look forward to working with you to preserve and protect that lifestyle, to make sure that we, as we generate economic opportunities for our products, for our families, for our communities, as we move and advance this industry forward to better and bigger arenas, I believe that is there that we generate the hope and the future for the United States. So thank you very much for your work. I appreciate what you do. Let me know if there's anything that I can do to help in that effort. And I know that the work that we do really will generate a better society for us in the future. So thank you for allowing me to be with you here today. May God bless each and every one of you. I so appreciate your efforts, and I look forward to working with you to create a better future through agriculture in the United States of America. Thank you.